아멘.
Words from the Collect this morning. Lord, you have made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you. It's actually a very famous quotation from the Confessions of St. Augustine. And I'm going to reflect a little in the light of that on rest and on restlessness. Conscious, as I do so, that I'm leaving on one side the most enigmatic and challenging of all Jesus' parables. But there is a reason for it. I sat down to think very hard about the dishonest steward on Tuesday. I've turned over commentaries, both ancient and modern, and I come to Sunday morning absolutely no clearer in my mind about what that's about than I was at the start. So I promised to come back to the dishonest manager when I've had a chance to do some more thinking and praying, but it's just not ready yet. But what has also been running very much through my mind during the week is a reflection about that collect, about rest and about restlessness. We live pretty obviously in an age and a culture that's not good at resting, doesn't seem to understand rest, a time that's frenetic, when attention is ever more fragmented and more seems constantly to be demanded in the way of activity and of busyness. And it isn't simply that working hours for working people are long and demanding, it's that the culture of busyness and fragmentation attacks even the time that is designated for leisure, so that we fill that with lots of activity. Often fascinating and interesting. I know that it's important to distinguish between not to be seduced by the idea that work is what tires you out and leisure is what refreshes you, and very often elements in work are refreshing and elements of what one might do in free time can be quite draining. And that it's a business overall of keeping an eye on what puts energy into you and what takes energy out of you and keeping the balance so that you don't run an energy deficit for too long. I'm aware that it's more complicated than simply work here and play there. But on the whole, ours is a time of deep, deep restlessness in which we feel that we don't get rest because we just don't get rest. We've forgotten what it is genuinely to rest. There are some very fundamental and deep factors that account for this, or help to account for some of it in our time. One is Mr. Edison's invention of the electric light, a great blessing in many ways, but it means that we can't, in northern latitudes, hibernate the way that we used to. Actually, people rested a lot in the winter up in Britain, at a time when the working day was short. Only rich people who could afford lots of candles could be kind of working into the night, and the notion of a culture that worked 24/7 is totally alien. It's only artificial lighting and other things that make that possible. Another fundamental dynamic that we have to be aware of is the way in which everything for us is supposed to be getting better all the time. Productivity is meant to be going up. Efficiency is always meant to be greater. There is never a point at which you can really rest and say that is accomplished, because there are always the voices saying we've got to start all over again and do it even better. Think of poor old Leicester starting out in defence of their Premiership title. They've hardly had a moment to rest in the enjoyment of it when they're off on the treadmill to try to defend it. And if you've done really well, there's no way except down or on a level, and yet it's all meant to get better and better all the time. So we are living in a deeply restless time, and we suffer from a lack of rest. In those circumstances, we do well to attend carefully to the great gift that our Jewish friends and neighbours have given to humankind, the gift of the Sabbath, the notion of the day of rest. That lovely idea that as God, after 6 days of work, rested on the seventh day, so humankind needs to stop collectively and rest for a time. That is an idea that itself has to be executed with a certain degree of care. People who were brought up in the north of Scotland, in the Highlands and Islands, a half a generation back, will bear eloquent testimony to just how utterly miserable and exhausting an old-fashioned Presbyterian Sabbath was. When you couldn't do anything, you weren't allowed even to play, playgrounds being locked lest anyone defile the Sabbath by attempting to have fun on a swing or a merry-go-round. Clearly, that's a mistaken interpretation of the Sabbath, which is not about emptiness. It's not about vacuity. It's not about endless boredom and tedium as you wait for the sun to go down and for Monday, with at least a chance of something interesting like going to school coming upon you. No, that's not the way to do Sabbath. Because Jewish Sabbath, truly understood, is about families being together and about the community of God's people being together with God. Space in which there can be relationship. One of my favorite theological discussions of all time is a discussion that went on in the northern Galilean town of Safed, modern Safat. It's right up near the border with Lebanon, and it was famous because in the 17th and 18th centuries it was the home of a school of Jewish mysticism, or several schools of Jewish mysticism. And the rabbis of Safed had a very interesting discussion about whether lovemaking was allowed on the Sabbath or not. And roughly half the rabbis took the view that because lovemaking was procreative, it counted as work. And you could make love from you could make love from Sunday to Friday, but you know, sundown on Friday, you stop until you could resume when the Sabbath was over. But the other half of the rabbis of Safed took the clean contrary view, that actually this, if anything, this intimacy, this being present to one another in space and love, is exactly what the Sabbath was about, so that it was a religious duty to make love on the Sabbath. And they do say that on Friday evening in Safed, you could see some rabbis walking away from their homes and others walking towards their homes with a gleam in their eye. Well, that notion of space and rest that is filled with being present to one another and being present to God, that notion seems to me to be the true heart of the idea of rest. Resting is to be with God. You have made us for yourself, says the prayer, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you. And schools of rest, places where we learn to rest, where we practice rest, turn out surprisingly to be things like, for a Christian, being together in church or trying to say our prayers. I say surprisingly because both those things can at times feel like hard work. One of the ways in which the Church of England is kind of slightly losing its way just at the moment is that it's forgotten collectively that gathering together in church is to rest together in front of God, to be with God, that this, what we are doing now, exists for nothing other than our being together with God. Instead, we think this is the entertaining way in which we persuade people that church is fun and we fill the pews. So worship is for something. It's for getting the numbers to go up. Actually, worship is for God. It's for being with God. That is why we are here. That's the most fundamental thing about what we do on this Sunday morning. And similarly, prayer, we tend to fill with a sense of work. We've got to pray really hard for people's needs. We've got to bang on heaven's door as loudly as we can. But fundamentally, prayer is about resting in the presence of God, trying to rest, trying to be still, trying to stop the ceaseless internal chatter that goes inside us all the time, and just to be lovingly present before God in relationship, because he has made us for himself, and our hearts are restless until they rest in him. Schools, then, of prayer, of worship and liturgy, in which to try to learn rest. Let me end with another quotation from Augustine. It's the words with which he ends his mighty work, The City of God, a work that was written at a time of huge turmoil. I mean, forget the problems that face the world today, with the Goths just having sacked Rome, with the sense that the Roman Empire is collapsing around your ears, with a migration crisis on a scale beyond anything that we're living through. Augustine reflected across 600 or 700 pages on the nature of God's engagement with the world, and then he ended with these words. We shall come, he says, to a place where we shall rest. When we rest, we shall see, and clearly we'll see God, but he doesn't use that word. When we rest, we shall see. What we see, we will love, and what we love, we will praise in the end that has no end. Amen.